Marx follows the ever-changing landscape to discuss the latest pressing issues relevant to brand owners in Europe and beyond. During this series, Marx members and special guests share updates, experiences, and opinions. This is IP Law Today. This is Talking Marx.
Hello and welcome to the Talking Marx podcast. I'm James Nurton, the Marx editor. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by two members of the Marx Intellectual Asset Management, or IAM, team. And one of the big issues that the team covers is brand valuation. So we'll be discussing that topic over two podcasts, looking at the latest developments, the key challenges, what needs to change, and also some tips for brand owners. And to discuss all of this, I'm joined by Bill Budd and Sergio Elman. Bill is the Group Legal and IP Director at Virgin Group, where he's responsible for Virgin's brand and loyalty businesses, including all aspects of the licensing, monetization, protection, and enforcement of the Virgin brand worldwide. He's been a member of the IAM team since 2013 and also a member of the Marx Council since 2018. Sergio is a partner of Marval O'Farrell y Marval in Argentina and is a member of the firm's executive committee. He also teaches trademarks and, very relevant for today's topic, IP valuation, as visiting professor at the Universidad de San Andrés. Welcome to both of you.
Hello, hello, James. Hello, everybody. Nice to be talking to you today.
Hi, James. Hi, Sergio. Thank you for having me along.
Now, as this is quite a big topic, we're covering it over two episodes of Talking Marx. In this first episode, we'll look at what brand valuation is, the difference between valuation and evaluation, and some of the challenges that brand owners face. In the second episode, we'll look at developing issues, including ISO standards, and some examples of how brand valuation is used in practice. So to start, Sergio, what is brand valuation about and why is the IAM team looking into it?
Well, yes, brand valuation is obviously the process of estimating financial value of a brand, and this is normally coupled together with other intangible assets such as patents or goodwill which a company may have. So brand is just an aspect of the big chunk of information a company or a business needs to be capable of valuing, financially speaking. And obviously, Marcus being a trademark organization and our team being asset management focused has a special interest in this because that team deals in the commercial aspects of brands and trademarks, such as licensing or valuing these very important assets to companies. So that would be the quick take on what it's all about.
Yeah. And what are the particular challenges around brand valuation on a big scale, on a global level?
Well, the most important challenge, of course, is that the regulations for accountants, CPAs around the world, are really focused on registering what has happened in the past regarding financial aspects of a company, including cash flow, which might be generated by trademarks. And therefore, they cannot look into the future they're not allowed actually to look into the future as to what potential a trademark might have. And that's the big, big conundrum that is a challenge globally in order to try to make a better world for the value of trademarks in general. So this is a standard by the Standards Board, known as Standard 38. And obviously, it actually says that self-generated assets, which are trademarks, of course, within the company, are not being able to be valued. And I don't want to spoil what's going ahead, James, so I'll just say that is the big, big hurdle that we have to overcome.
Yeah. And so just so people can have a bit more detail, that Standard 38, that what is that exactly, and who decides that, and how important is it?
It's an international accounting standards board that actually issues a fairly long text for this Standard 38, which explains different aspects of an asset. You know, it has to be independent. You have to be able to identify it. You have to think about amortization, etc. But after setting out all the standards which are applicable to many other assets, when it comes to trademarks, it says you can't value these if they are self-generated. You can value them if you've bought them, because then there has been a value, a market value assigned, or some sort of value assigned to them, but you cannot actually value them when they've grown within the company. And so the big problem is not all of what it says, but what it doesn't, and it doesn't allow accountants to do, because it's not the job, essentially. As I say, accountants don't look into the future. They just look to the past and hopefully the present, and just register whatever is going on in a company at a given moment.
Yeah, and as you say, I mean, Marks is an association of brand owners. So, you know, everyone listening to this, I think, will be very close to brands. And yet, you know, this is quite a big oversight, really, isn't it? In the brands, which are increasingly valuable for many companies, can't be easily valued for the reasons you say.
Yeah, there is light at the end of the tunnel, though, James. I'm okay. Sure that Bill will be able to explain moving forward part of that, and I may give a few examples as well. But of course, discussing the hurdle and sort of jumping over it is part of what we're doing here today, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and on that point, maybe we can bring in Bill then. I mean, so from your perspective, from a business perspective, Bill, how important is brand valuation, and what kind of challenges do you see at the moment?
Well, it's a good question, and I guess my instinct is to answer in a slightly facetious way, perhaps off the cuff. But, you know, on the one hand, brand valuation is very important, but in the day-to-day workings of a company, perhaps it's just not front of mind, and it's just not that important at all. So I totally get that a strong brand can be a very valuable company asset. It's worth protecting. It's worthy of investing behind. It's probably worth fighting for. That focus is on monetary value, as Sergio has said. But when I think about the day-to-day, what it's like to launch new products, to think about new strategies and new markets, that financial value question may not be at the front of mind. And actually what the company might be more interested in is a related discipline to brand valuation, which is sort of the evaluation of the brand, so evaluation rather than valuation. And that really is a discipline which is connected with valuation, but is designed to give you more of an insight into the health of the brand, you know, how it is performing, how strong it is, and where the opportunities are. And those two disciplines, I think, are, to an extent, working together. Perhaps I wouldn't go quite as far as saying they're symbiotic, but they work together. And I think that that's an important consideration for most companies.
So evaluation would be less about the sort of dollar value of a brand and more about the how it's protected, how it's used, consumers or others interact with it, that kind of thing.
That's exactly right. And I think, you know, given the importance of brands to most companies, understanding your customer, understanding where your market is, and your ability to launch a product or a set of services into a market using a brand is absolutely critical in the day-to-day. I don't want to undermine the question about brand valuation, but I think it needs to be seen in context. I mean, determining the financial valuation of a brand can be absolutely critical, particularly at sort of key moments in a company's life cycle. So sometimes there are circumstances where evaluation is forced. I guess classically that's M&A, M&A transactions, you know, mergers and acquisitions, maybe a business is being sold or a division of a business, or maybe just some trademarks. But there might be other ways to exploit the value of a brand as well. Maybe licensing, you have an asset you want to lend to somebody else. How do you put a value on that lending? You know, what's the right royalty rate to apply to that? How do you reach that determination? There might be tax projects that you do internally at a company around structuring and transfer pricing. You might even get into a dispute about brand valuation, and we had a dispute about on quite a large scale relatively recently. And I guess, you know, potentially it's even relevant for raising finance. Yeah, at the more ambitious end, you might be looking to securitize income off some royalty streams, potentially patent streams or trademark streams, but it might just be looped in with some other financing. You know, a financing group might be taking charges, fixed or floating, over some IP assets. So the question of value relating to IP is going to provoke interesting questions at a number of junctures, I think, in a company's life cycle.
Would it be fair to say, or would this be unfair, that you only really need to think about valuation of the brand as opposed to evaluation if you need some money, basically, if you're looking at a merger or a fundraising or some sort of deal?
I think those moments bring the question into sharp relief. If you have to place a value on something, sometimes we get philosophical and we think, well, how can I reduce this wonderful thing I've created, this brand I'm very proud of, all these values and things that we have that stand behind the brand? How can I reduce that to a simple number and just sell it for a thing? Ultimately, sometimes we're forced to do that. And mm-hmm. you need tools to do that at the right moments. And there are options out there to help you do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Sergio.
Yes. I'd like to comment on what you've just said, Bill, here. Because obviously not having this at the forefront of your everyday sort of business is also part of the problem, which is not a regulatory problem. It's a fact of life. The problem then arises, or the consequence of this slight hurdle, is that companies rush to make valuations when they pointedly need that valuation for a given problem or a given business, which may be every other year or every a few years, and they don't keep a tab of what has been happening in the past few years. And that is part of the problem, which I would say would stand out as something, an improvement that companies could have to at least keep some key indicators as to the value, either be it as a financial value or an evaluation, depending on the situation, but do this regularly in order to be ready when you need that for business. Because you know that sooner or later, it might be 1, 2, or 3 years, you will need some information. So having this information at the tip of your fingers, or even for decision making at the board level, etc., is always useful, and not only sort of as spurts during the company's activities. So I guess that is again a hurdle which is more cultural, but it arises to a large extent from this big hurdle on the regulatory CPA issues. You know, you cannot value this, the finance people cannot value this, so you just leave it aside until it really becomes a pressing problem. So trying to change this a little bit is what I'm suggesting could be a good way forward for companies. Obviously not spend a lot of money all the time on this, but have some regular key point indicators is definitely the way to go.
So, Bill, a couple of minutes ago, you just touched on the tools that are available to brand owners for brand valuation. Can you just say a little bit more about those tools and how they can be helpful, what they can be used for, and to the extent they exist?
Sure. So I don't think there's a sort of single one-size-fits-all tool for this, but there are some trends, and I think some of those trends have more authority than others. So I would say on the financial valuation side, three or so main approaches have emerged over the last sort of 20 or so years. And they can be summarized fairly neatly. There's the market approach, there's the cost approach, and finally there's the income approach. The market approach is effectively what would it cost you on the open market to buy this asset? And that's easiest to work out in the context of a live transaction. And I think to an extent, that's how the brand valuation industry was born back in the sort of 1980s. You know, a company would sell itself on the stock exchange, for example, and you could look at all the assets that company had and you could top them up. And then you realized there was a delta between the value that's paid for the company and the value of the individual assets. And there's a sort of stream on top. And you thought, what is that attributable to? And part of the answer was brand and goodwill. And that was a way to understand how that value had been reached and to justify the price that had been paid by the market. So that is a sort of market-driven approach. If you haven't got an immediate answer from a live transaction and you're trying to work out what should I pay for something, you might look to comparables. So you might try to sort of look at a company and try and work out how much that brand is worth. And you might think about other brands in that sector performing in a similar way. And that the theory of that works pretty well until you start trying to look for the comparables, because ultimately brands are pretty unique things. And true comparables can be hard to find. Quite often you end up with a sort of football field of comparables and you get more information, but you don't get more help. So the approach that's market-driven has its upsides, but it has its drawbacks as well. The cost approach is probably the second approach. And this is perhaps a less valuable approach than the other two approaches, but you look at what you've invested in that brand over time or what it would cost to replace that brand with another brand, and that's supposed to give you your answer. I think you don't have to think too long about that to realize that brand value is rarely the sum of the investment costs. So this approach is not really used very often. And perhaps the third and perhaps the most orthodox approach is the income approach, which is to look at what are the economic benefits you expect to receive from that brand over time. Usually that's future cash flows. And then you take the value of those future cash flows and you discount them back to reach a net present value. And we at Virgin use a sort of variation of that to model some of our portfolio.
And that's very interesting. And those three approaches, are they things that sort of in-house counsel would be familiar with, would be dealing with, or is it something that your accounts department and your external accountants would be more kind of focused on?
I think it depends on the company. I think if your your brand is very important at the company, or you're dealing with an awful lot of trademarks, then you're likely to have some familiarity with those approaches. It also helps, I think, if you're quite transactional as a company, because if you've been involved in buying and selling brands and brand assets, then you're likely to be familiar with the playbook, I think. But it would be perfectly possible to have a long and distinguished in-house career without having got on your sleeves rolled up on these sorts of topics, I think.
Yeah, and most in-house counsel have lots of other things they need to be doing as well. So Okay, so turning back to you then, Sergio, for reasons that Bill has said, not every company perhaps will always want to undertake brand valuation, but for those that do and that feel a need to do it or have to do it for some reason, what are the kind of things that they need to consider if they're going to do that?
Yes, obviously the main and very obvious short answer is they need to consider the purpose of what they're making the valuation for, try to identify the proper number of assets that are included in that valuation. Bill just mentioned goodwill, for instance, and that a little bit is overlapping with trademarks because it is a rather ethereal concept, both trademarks and goodwill. So I would say that one of the main hurdles at the time of actually conducting a valuation is separating those two if you need to separate. For instance, if you're trying to sell a bunch of trademarks and not the whole company. Or license a group of trademarks pertaining to a given business, which is not does not account for the full value of that business. So trying to identify exactly what you need to evaluate, what the purpose is, and the methodology amongst those three alternatives is the main purpose. Normally, an accountant would be using at least two methodologies. There are certain sort of splits even within those three that Bill mentioned, which an expert accountant would probably choose. And actually, rather than create a single number, they are much more liable to create a range, you know, minimum of this, maximum of the other. So you would not be looking at an actual number saying, it's not like buying a car. I mean, you go to the retailer and you buy the car and it always costs more or less the same, give or take a penny. This is very, very sort of subjective, and obviously different accountants might even reach different conclusions. That's why a range is much better than an actual specific number. Define the purpose and the audience, and then set obviously the dates and the premises that you're using to make your valuation. So that is part of the accounting job. And basically, as Bill has just stated, in-house counsel and even outside counsel rarely get into this detail, but it's good to have at least a bit of awareness as to what is going on there, and being able to contest perhaps some of those tenets that they may be using, because we may know much better. If you're an inside counsel, obviously you know your brands perhaps better than an outside accountant. And if you're an outside counsel, you might have a bearing into risks that an accountant might not be, especially the legal risks, sort of litigation risks, et cetera, that might actually impact on the job that is being undertaken.
Yeah. So, I mean, this may be coming from a very skeptical or cynical point of view, but if the valuation is going to be a range and potentially quite a big range, and if you potentially could get different valuations from different accountants, what is the benefit of having a valuation? I mean, is it so subjective that it just becomes not very useful?
I'm starting to chuckle to myself because for quite a long time, I thought about brand valuation, the sort of the allocation of a monetary number to a brand, as really a bit like witchcraft. You would have these various methodologies which would seem scientific until you scratched away at them, and as you scratched away at them more and more, the less rigorous they looked and the more superficial they looked. Right. And you can be forgiven for thinking that it's at least as much art as science, I think.
I agree, Bill, and that's obviously as we move along in this chat, we see that there are more hurdles than answers, but still awareness about which they are, I think, is important for people listening in here. And I would say that narrowing down that range to something plausible is already helpful. Mm-hmm. And obviously, if you're on the selling side or the buying side, you will choose one side of the range. That is a pretty sort of a normal business decision, or you might come up with an independent valuation, which is different, but at least it gives you a starting point on discussion. And I'm going back again to my initial point of having regular key point indicators within the company. That also reduces the range within which you can work. If those indicators are properly chosen and are being kept regularly as part of the business, then all of that range and all of that uncertainty tends to be reduced. And that's, right. I think, as good as it gets, basically. But it is still, therefore, a good exercise to having it done over a period of time rather than on a spot check every time, which makes it even more uncertain. Why are you saying this? Why are you coming up with this number? Why is the range so big? Different if you can answer, you know, I've been doing this for 10 years and these are the indicators I've taken, etc. And the financial aspects, the market aspects, the legal aspects, and I've taken everything to account. I think that makes a different story.
I fully agree with that. And I think the ability to track consistently over time the value of the brand is at least as valuable in relative terms as the absolute number that you reach. So it allows you to answer sort of curved ball questions that you might get in the context of discussing a brand's value. So, for example, let's say you have a very negative news cycle in relation to an internet outage or something that affects one of the companies in your portfolio. If the question is posed in that context, what does that mean for your brand value? And you have a consistent rock of data over the last 10 years showing what happens in the news cycle and comparing that with the value that you've done at the time, you might actually be able to answer that question in quite an authoritative way to say, well, look, this is a cyclical bit of news. It doesn't affect the underlying value of the brand. And here's the data to show it, because you can point to a similar example in 2005 when that happened. So there are hidden benefits to tracking the data in a consistent and methodologically sound way, as Sergio says.
Yeah. So if you can say, the brand is worth 10% more than it was several years ago, or as you say, it's fluctuated in response to these developments, that may be useful in itself, whether or not you actually have a specific value of number of dollars.
I'd say so.
That's very interesting, Bill, and probably a good point, I think, at which to take a break. So thanks very much to both of you for your contributions so far. We'll continue this discussion in the next episode of Talking Marks, which is available on the Marks website and on Spotify. So please do join us there to hear Bill and Sergio talking about valuation standards, some case studies, and tips for brand owners. See you shortly.
Join us again soon for another podcast on an important issue for brand owners. To find out more on our website and guest speakers, visit marks.org/podcast.